I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Last June, the trial of Bill Cosby, accused of aggravated indecent assault, ended in a hung jury after 6 days of deliberations. Yesterday, after a day and a half, a different jury in the same courthouse, the same courtroom with the same judge and the same prosecutors, convicted Cosby on 3 counts of drugging and sexually assaulting Andrea Constand in his home near Philadelphia more than 14 years ago. She was a Temple University employee at the time. Dozens of women have come forward in recent years to accuse Cosby of sexually assaulting them after giving them alcohol and or pills. Five of those women testified at the second trial. Cosby is now confined to his Pennsylvania home while his attorneys appeal the verdict. Laura Benshoff and Bobby Allen covered both trials for WHYY, and they join us in our studio. Laura, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much, Marty.
And Bobby, nice to have you back with us as well.
Thanks for having me.
So what was the reaction in the courtroom, Bobby?
So we all get in the courtroom, and juror number two, who is this middle-aged woman with about shoulder-length blonde hair and glasses, reads the verdict, right? Guilty, guilty, guilty. And the first thing that happened was this high-pitched shriek right behind us. There was a woman so overcome with emotion that she couldn't contain herself. And that was one of Cosby's accusers. And it was so dramatic that she had to be escorted out of the courtroom. Another accuser ran out crying. There was footage all over the networks of these two women just completely inconsolable, falling over themselves, trying to leave the courtroom because it was so emotional. And Andrea Constand had this kind of stoic face looking straight ahead. Cosby, too, didn't have much of a reaction. But then when Kevin Steele, the prosecutor, tried to get Cosby immediately put in handcuffs so that he would wait for his sentencing hearing in a jail cell, and usually that only happens if somebody is considered a flight risk or a public safety threat, right? And the judge says, "You really think Mr. Cosby is a flight risk?" And Kevin Steele says, "He has a private jet." And that's when Cosby looks at Steele and says, "I don't have a private jet, you a-hole," using the expletive, and the whole courtroom just gasped. It was a really, really dramatic scene. And ultimately, the judge said, "No, like you noted, Cosby can go back to his estate in Cheltenham and wait for his sentencing hearing there."
Laura, you both covered both trials. Mm-hmm. What was the main difference between these two trials?
There were so many differences. I mean, you listed all of the similarities, but Cosby had a new defense team with a new strategy that was very much burn all bridges. We're from California. You know, we're the best defense team money can buy. So we're going to hit hard, and we're going to try to gain every single advantage in this case that we can. So on the defensive side, that was a big difference. And then on the prosecution side, I mean, those five additional women who are allowed to testify and the order in which the prosecution set up their testimony was very different, and I think pretty masterful on their part to make it easier for the jury to understand their claims and understand the case that the prosecution was trying to put together.
And a professor from Temple University, as you were describing to me, Laura, before going on the air, kind of laid the groundwork, it seems, for the prosecution.
That's right. Last time, the prosecution had a sexual assault expert testify sort of towards the end, seeming to try to tie up loose ends. But this time, they had a sexual assault expert go right off the bat. The first person that the jury heard from was a woman who's testified, she estimated in dozens, if not more than 100 trials as a sexual assault expert who studied violent sexual offenders and also victims of sexual assault. And so she got up there and gave kind of a master class in what sexual assault can look like, what it looks like when it's done by an acquaintance, which is what the allegations this time around dealt with. And so having her kind of lay a groundwork like that meant that when the jury heard from the next five accusers, they had some context. They had a frame in which to hang their stories. And that seemed, at least based on the verdict, to be very effective.
Let me play Montgomery County District Attorney Kevin Steele speaking to reporters. This was yesterday.
"We have shown from our record that money and power, or who you are, will not stop us from a criminal investigation or prosecuting a case. What was revealed through this investigation was a man who had spent decades preying on women that he drugged and sexually assaulted, and a man who had evaded this moment here today for far too long."
Much has been made of the Me Too movement or moment that has gotten so much attention this year. And obviously, if it has beginning in the fall, Bobby, there's some question about whether this verdict was even tied into that that moment or that movement.
That's right. I mean, this is the first high-profile celebrity case in the Me Too era. A lot of experts are saying this is kind of a test case, and you almost have a perfect example in some ways to say last time Cosby was on trial, the Harvey Weinstein allegations hadn't yet broke. Since they have, spawning the Me Too era, we have a different verdict. That may be a bit of a simplification, and the judge, when he was trying to vet jurors to find very impartial, fair fact finders in this case, asked a number of questions about Me Too and said, of course everyone has heard of it, but are you able to put it aside in assessing the facts in this case? And supposedly, they did find 12 people who were able to put the Me Too movement aside, at least in theory. Now, the prosecution notably never brought up the Me Too movement in the entire two-week trial. The defense, however, tipped their hat several times at it. And they did this by sort of putting all of the five accusers and Andrea Constand into the kind of same category to say they're all these kind of failed starlets who were gold diggers and just after Cosby for publicity and money, and Kathleen Bliss, who had really withering cross-examination and tried to shred the credibility of some of these witnesses on the stand, said, when you join a movement based on anger and emotion, you don't change a damn thing. That was a direct quote.
Wow.
And she said, making your decisions based on emotion is not rational. Mob mentality pursuals is not a due process. I mean, she really was making what everyone in the room thought was a clear hat tip, tipping her hat to the Me Too movement. And you got to think that when the jury went back to deliberate, some of those notions probably resonated.
Well, and I wonder how much as reporters, you're watching the jury or jurors to see how they are reacting to what they're hearing in the courtroom, Laura.
I mean, we do keep our eyes on them as much as we can. There is a large screen to protect evidence that's
gargantuan,
placed right in front of them. So you kind of had to pick, which jurors do I want to look at today? Do I want to look at the ones on the left side of the bench or the ones on the right side of the bench?
So reporters sort of hopped around.
Yeah,
every part of the room.
Right, because you could not get a perfect view of everyone and also the defendant all at once. But yeah, we definitely kept tabs, and they seemed very, very attentive this time. They took a lot of notes during testimony. When they asked for certain evidence to be replayed or re-said back to them during deliberations, you could tell they were listening for certain pieces of information. They never really gave away their hand, but at the same time, you could tell that this was a jury that was taking their job very, very seriously.
You mentioned a person in the courtroom had accused Bill Cosby. She did not testify, but she spoke a lot to reporters. And I just want to play, it's about a minute of what she said yesterday. Cosby accuser Lily Bernard, she in fact once appeared on the Cosby Show back in the 1980s. And here she is speaking to reporters yesterday.
I stand here in the spirit of Martin Luther King, who said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but today it has bent towards justice. Last year, when I was sitting in the courtroom of the first trial and the verdict was hung, I left with such a tremendous sense of disappointment. And it became evident to me that the justice system is light years behind modern culture. But today, this jury has shown that what the Me Too movement has saying is that women are worthy of being believed. And I thank the jury. I thank the prosecution. But I looked at that jury. There's this one young black man on that jury who I looked upon as my son. And I know the disappointment that he felt in looking at a beloved black male iconic father figure and being able to yet render a guilty verdict. I thank him.
She says so much there, obviously. And Bill Cosby in his heyday, America's dad, and here he is, Laura, basically confined to his home, waiting for sentencing, but his lawyers are appealing. On what grounds?
Well, they vowed to appeal. They haven't filed anything yet that we know of. I mean, the verdict came down yesterday. Along the way, they were, of course, planting seeds, as you would expect any good defense attorney to be doing in the event that the verdict didn't go their way. Some of those might be things like having those five other women testify. That's There's a lot of case law about that type of a witness because it can be really biasing for the jury to hear, oh, this person did all these other bad things in the past. Well, they must be guilty, right? That opens a lot of area for them to fight on an appeal. Some other things that they could bring up were issues around a juror. They tried very hard to get one of the jurors dismissed over a comment he made that we don't know if it was a joke or not during selections, where he basically said, well, I think he's guilty, so we should all go home. He was allowed to sit. So there's about a half dozen things like that that he could bring up. I don't know if you want to add any more in, Bobby.
Yeah, the people close to the defense team have told me that one issue that they really hope to pursue on appeal is what really started this case to begin with, which is a civil deposition that Cosby sat for in 2005 and 2006, and he answered questions from Andrea Constan's lawyer expecting it to never go public. Right. It's what they call a discovery deposition. That's usually never publicly revealed. But after the Associated Press intervened to try to unseal that document, it was unsealed. And that yesterday, Kevin Steele, the district attorney, said the unsealing of that document put in motion the criminal case. And I think Cosby's lawyers are looking at that and saying there's a Fifth Amendment case here on self-incrimination, that he sat down for that deposition that led to these charges, never thinking it would be public. Mm-hmm. He was under that understanding, and I think they're going to pursue that on appeal.
Because of what he said in that deposition, I guess.
It was used against him, and he never thought that it was going to be made public. He was under the understanding it was part of a confidential civil settlement, and it actually was burst into the public when a federal judge in Philadelphia unsealed it.
Wow, right. Interesting. Were any members of Bill Cosby's family in the courtroom?
Camille was there for maybe half of one day. She came for closing arguments.
That's his wife.
That's his wife. His wife, Camille, of more than 50 years. And it was sort of a big deal. She came in with him. There's this long walk past the cameras into the courthouse. She was there wearing this, you know, ankle-length yellow, bright, sunny sheath dress and big oval glasses, which she never took off in the courtroom. And so she sat through her husband's attorneys giving sort of their most withering, their most cutting, their most forceful arguments, and sort of sat quietly nodding and smiling the whole time. And then she left. And that was the only person from his family who was there. There were many people from his inner circle, TV writers, jazz musicians, people who would come through on different days and just sit in the front row and be, you know, standing behind him, sitting behind him. But that was the only appearance by anyone in his immediate family.
We're almost out of time here, Bobby. Is Bill Cosby now a registered sex offender?
Now there's going to be a what's called a PSI, which is a pre-sentence investigation, and they're going to maybe list him as a registered sex offender. That's something that's being looked at now ahead of his sentencing. But again, the appeals process, which is going to be launching soon, could take many, many, many years before it's fully resolved. So when Tom Mesereau, Cosby's attorney, said the fight is not over, I think he's right that this is going to be continuing for some time.
Are you too exhausted?
Completely wiped out.
Very tired. A little residual adrenaline, though.
Yeah, exactly.
But two trials. I mean, obviously going over some very emotional testimony. And then, of course, this verdict of guilty, guilty, guilty.
Yeah, I don't think it's really sunk in yet. I think everybody else had that moment yesterday where they got the push alert that said, oh, Bill Cosby's guilty. But for us, it's just been a part of this flow and onslaught of work that it hasn't really
hit me. Yeah, the past three weeks, it's been like summer camp with all the reporters covering Cosby. We all know each other very, very, very well.
Well, you do great reporting, and we really appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. Laura Benshoff, Bobby Allen covered both trials of Bill Cosby for WHYY and obviously joined us here in the studio. After this very short break, a conversation with Philadelphia's poet laureate, Raquel Salas Rivera. Stay with us. We'll be right back.